Welcome to Break Bias. I'm your host, Brad Kramer. It's the 90th episode, 9-0, and I am here ahead of the Australian Grand Prix. The former season opener has seen a few changes over recent years and has become probably even more of a fan favorite, I would say. But before we get to today's episode, first, a quick reminder to check out the link tree in the description. It has links to all the pages that you can find this podcast or the ways you can contact me. Now, let's get into the storylines ahead of the action in Melbourne. Albert Park, a great circuit. I am happy that it's back. It had a bit of a hiatus, actually just a 1 year hiatus, but it was the first year I watched the sport in 2021. So it feels like it was a return. Same thing with Suzuka. And I really enjoyed the first Grand Prix there in 2022. I actually watched it with a couple of friends because in Canada it basically is Saturday night, super late. So we got together, watched Charles Leclerc absolutely dominate Max Verstappen's car blow up. And if you guys are frequent followers of this podcast, you know I've had Shaq on a few times. He's a huge Verstappen fan. And at that point, it looked like Ferrari could be running away with the championship. It was actually a bit of a devastating blow to him. But of course, since then, it's basically been all Red Bull and Max. So he's been living large since that 2022 Australian Grand Prix. But anyway, the track, which is Albert Park, as I mentioned already, is pretty fantastic, I would say. It's maybe not the best for racing, but it does have those three DRS zones where there are opportunities to overtake. The recent changes they've made, like specifically in the middle sector, I think have been positive. I would say it's a mix of medium to high speed corners. And the main thing that they took away was a chicane that kind of ruined the flow of the middle sector. Now the middle sector is very high speed and it probably includes one of the best complexes on the entire calendar, at least the most visually satisfying. Turn 11 to 12, it's a very, very fast high speed chicane, and to watch the cars go through there is honestly, it's incredible. I would say that and maybe the swimming pool chicane in Monaco are the only two that really come close to just seeing how under stress, or basically at the peak of their powers, I would say these cars really are. That corner, or those sequences of corners, really show what a Formula One car can do. It is incredible to watch in qualifying. I do love this track for quali, but as I said, in the races, it can be a little bit more processionary. I think last year really proved that. We can get into last year, I guess. For most of the race, it was Max Verstappen, obviously way out in front, but then it was Lewis doing a great job defending from Fernando. And then a little further back, it was kind of a four-car battle of like Sainz. I think it was Sainz, Gasly, and Stroll. Russell broke down. Yeah, there was quite a few retirements. Of course, we'll get into the red flag incident in a sec, but even before that, Albon crashed out. Leclerc went off into the gravel on the first lap. George Russell's engine blew. There were quite a few retirements, but of course it was the Kevin Magnussen crash that brought out the red flag. They do a huge, just completely chaotic restart, where, let me think, Sainz crashed into the back of Alonso. Sargeant went into the back of DeVries. The Alpines took each other out. Perez went over or cut the corner at turn one. And Stroll went straight off at what would have been a podium place, straight off at turn three. That would have been just devastating for him had the race continued. But of course, all the carnage behind Stroll led to another red flag. There were not enough laps to complete. And they basically had to reinstate the order. So even though Alonso got taken out by Sainz, he was still given that podium place. Lewis Hamilton and Max Verstappen did get away cleanly, but of course, Verstappen took the win. So that also created an incredible podium. That was the race that we got. Or was Newey in Canada? Actually, you know what? Now I'm starting to question myself. I think the Adrian Newey podium was in Canada, not in Australia. But anyway, still a fantastic podium of Verstappen, Alonso, and Hamilton. Sainz did get a 5-second penalty for taking out Fernando Alonso. And because they finished under a safety car or under a red flag, technically, was it a safety car? Yeah, I guess they had to go around just to do one lap under a safety car to finish the race. Super weird. But because of that, Carlos Sainz could not build a 5-second gap, of course. So he moved like all the way down to the bottom of the order. He was very upset by that penalty. Anyway, yeah, it was a pretty crazy race, what happened in Australia last year. So a lot to recap. I usually don't spend that much time on what happened last year, but it was insane. It was probably the most chaotic Grand Prix of last year, that or maybe Zandvoort, because of the changing weather. It was just insanity. Monaco, I guess, was kind of chaotic as well. But yeah, let's talk about how I think the cars this year, based off of what we've seen the first two races, will fare at this track. As I was saying, that really fast chicane, along with other fast corners. Like, I think this track, I wouldn't say it has a ton of slow speed. The last sector, maybe a little bit of slow speed, but yeah, it is mostly medium to high, so might not be suiting Mercedes very well. I'm not anticipating they're going to be going through that chicane very comfortably, unlike the McLaren, who might just fly through there. The Red Bull will be great everywhere, as it always is. All the top cars will probably fare better in Australia than the Mercedes, but it's such a Jekyll and Hyde show with that team. You never know. I wouldn't be surprised if they crop up here and all of a sudden they're totally fine in the high speed, because obviously there's just something they fundamentally don't understand about their package. I do think Haas and Alpine will probably struggle at a track like this, while, you know, McLaren, again, they should fare well as Ferrari and Red Bull, of course, because they're the clear number one and number two in Formula One right now. You would have to say Ferrari do have a bit of a step up on that fight for P2, but we'll see how it progresses as the season goes on, because the rest is still a bit of a mystery. I have a hard time understanding whether Aston Martin will be better than Mercedes here. I think that will be a tricky one. Alonso could easily be way quicker than them, because you never know with Mercedes right now. Also, who will emerge from the bottom five? I don't think it will be Haas and Alpine. Maybe Williams goes well here. Albon had a great race until he crashed. I think RB maybe finally has the weekend that they should be executing or should have been executing at this point. We'll see how that reflects all in my predictions, I guess, because, yeah, Alex Albon running P6 last year until he crashed. That could be a good shout for maybe stealing a point for Williams. And that was also pre-Canada upgrade. Williams was not a very good car until Canada, and then they started to have some good races and some good qualifying performances. Before that, it looked like the 10th fastest car, or maybe 9th fastest at best, because AlphaTauri was also struggling a lot. Yeah, so let's predict this year's Grand Prix, I guess, right? For quali, I will not triple down on Charles Leclerc. I know I have picked him the last two times and he has not secured pole. So this time, I guess Max has bullied me into submission. I think Lando Norris puts it on pole. Ha ha! I got you. I'm not taking Max Verstappen. That's right. You will not convert me, Max. You will not convert me to picking you in qualifying. I'm going with Lando Norris. It's going to be an epic pole position for the Briton. On race day, though, yeah, it's finally back to Sunday, and I think Max Verstappen takes it no problem. You'd be crazy to pick anyone but Max at this point. He will extend his race streak to a race win streak, I guess, to 10. And I think he'll probably be followed home by Checo again. I like the way Checo has, well, or at least drove in Saudi. I think Red Bull has a nice performance advantage. And as long as Checo's driving with a bit of confidence, he should be right up there, right behind Max. So, yeah. I think, let's say, Checo redeems his very scrappy Melbourne performance from last year, because he came home in P5, and that was a recovery from going off into the gravel in qualifying. So if he keeps it together in qualifying, just makes Q3, ends up in a somewhat decent spot, I think he comes home P2 in the race. So a bit of a lame choice, but I'll say the final podium spot does go to Charles Leclerc. I think Leclerc gets past Norris in the latter stages, and Norris falls to P4. As for my bold prediction, I think Fernando Alonso does beat both the Mercedes, but that's not super bold. So I will also say that Alonso qualifies on the second row and that Lance Stroll gets beaten by one of the RBs, specifically Yuki Tsunoda, not Daniel Ricciardo at his home race. That would be awesome to see his first points for or in 2024, not first points for the team, but RB's first points this year, and then Daniel Ricciardo scoring the first points for that team at his home race would be pretty awesome. But I don't think that will happen. So yeah, I'm going Tsunoda P10, beating Lance Stroll to the points. Fernando Alonso has basically a great weekend. That's my bold prediction. Yeah, and as I said, you know what my prediction for pole is? Lando Norris, although he doesn't get a podium out of it. And of course, my race win is going to be another dominant Red Bull performance. So let's get into Brad's bets. All right, Brad's bets coming at you one day after recording yesterday. So everything you heard, I recorded on Sunday. Today is Monday. I had to wait for the sports books to actually I'll throw out some odds for the race. They had basically nothing at the time. It was just who was going to win the race. And that is an impossible thing to bet on right now because either you take a massive risk on winning pretty much nothing on Max Verstappen or you're donating money. So I'm not gonna just make picks off of who should win. It's not exactly a smart bet right now. But anyway, Brad's bets, we're gonna go all the way back to last week's picks. This is the last week I'm going to do this. I think from now on, I am going to cover Brad's bets on every single episode. So after a race, I'll just go over my picks and talk. You know, I won't preview my picks for the following week because it's too far in advance. But I feel like doing the Brad's bets picks from last week, a couple weeks after the race is just it feels weird. No one's gonna remember what they picked anyway. But let's go over it. So I did choose for the Saudi Arabian Grand Prix a Charles Leclerc pole. That, of course, did not happen, but I did say my favorite pick was Max Verstappen fastest in FP1. Those were great odds. That did hit. So if you bet on that, you are a happy man or woman. Both Red Bull podium was also, it wasn't as great of odds, but it was still a win. I believe it was like minus 120, almost double your money. That cashed. And then my other two picks that did not happen were no safety car. That was a risky one at plus 450, I believe. That did not cash. And then a long shot bet on Lando fastest lap did not happen either. So really, if you take out the long shot, 50-50, that's what you hope for. So it was somewhat of a successful weekend, even though it feels like my record's not that good there. This week, Ollie Bearman is actually kind of screwing everything up. I didn't touch on him in the preview and whether Carlos Sainz 100% will be driving in Melbourne. I don't think Ferrari has made that absolutely clear. However, they have posted a photo of race week in Melbourne or whatever, and Carlos Sainz is in the photo. Everything suggested last weekend that, or the weekend before, I should say, that he would be racing in Australia. I fully expect him to be ready to race. So Ollie Bearman should not be on the sports books right now, but he is. So Carlos Sainz, you can't bet on, and it's kind of screwing with all of the odds because with Carlos Sainz there, it changes who you think could be in the top six and who could be on the podium and everything. So it's actually kind of a nightmare week to bet, but I still have some picks for you, of course. So here we go. First of all, I like Yuki Tsunoda to score points this weekend. I think Australia is probably going to be a little bit more chaotic than the average race. I think it definitely opens up opportunities for one of those bottom five teams to snipe at the back end of the points. I like RB to kind of turn it around and have a better weekend. Tsunoda's the one driving better than Ricciardo at the moment. So I think plus 175 is a pretty decent shot because right now the sports books are just like 100, like massively favoring the top five teams. And even if you don't pick one of the top five, they like Hülkenberg and Albon better. I understand where that's coming from 100%. However, I think RB, they should be the sixth fastest team. And I think maybe this weekend is when they finally prove that they are the sixth fastest team. So, yeah, it's still a bit of a long shot to pick anyone bottom 5 points, but I think the value here on Sonoda and the likelihood is still a smart bet. Now, this is my, again, safety pick that I really like, and it's again for Max Verstappen to go fastest in FP1. He has effortless speed right now. Red Bull has no reason to sandbag anymore. You're not going to get the odds you got last week because Max didn't lead any of the practice sessions. But I think, as we saw last year, Max Verstappen led a ton of practice sessions because he doesn't care about sandbagging and not showing his true pace. He just goes out there, puts the laps in, and usually goes fastest. The only thing that can stop that are, late red flags and stuff that just screws with low fuel runs. Max can lock up on his low fuel run and then just not go again. There's no need for it in practice. So things like that can happen, and that's why you get odds like -125 instead of -500, like winning the race. But still, I think it's good value for something that's pretty likely to happen still. Now these two are the ones I don't like as much, but I had to give you guys at least four picks. So these are kind of my next favorite picks, I guess, if you want to call it. And this is where I think Ollie Bearman is really screwing things up because I got Piastri top six. I don't love it. It's -130. I think that should be plus money, not in the minus. So the value is kind of what I have a problem with. Although I do think top six is definitely in the cards for him. As I said, I don't think Mercedes will fare well here. I think Aston Martin should be behind the McLarens. So that does leave the top three teams, Red Bull, Ferrari, and McLaren. However, we don't know what Piastri's pace is going to be like at this track. We don't know what McLaren is going to be like because everything we saw from them last year, post upgrade was great, but we didn't see they didn't have the upgrade here. They still a good result, but it was also a bit luck based. So I think they will run well here, but -130, I don't love the value, but it's still almost double your money, and I think it has a pretty good chance of happening. And the last one here is just it's not great value at all. But Charles Leclerc probably should be third up there on the podium, and it's -160, so it's not a great return. But he definitely probably is the most likely to end up third up there on the podium with the Red Bulls. So I had to throw that in there. It's still not terrible value. And then the long shot, of course, is Lando Norris on pole position, as I predicted in the previous segment. That's +2200, so a huge, huge win that would be if it were correct. Of course, it's a long shot though, so don't go crazy with it. Anyway, before I wrap up here, just a quick another Red Bull drama update. This stuff is from a few days ago, but I think it's important to keep you guys in the know of what's going on with this pretty big Formula One news story right now that's not going to go away anytime soon. Yeah, it's not a huge development, but it's important nonetheless. The woman who complained about Horner's behavior is set to appeal the company's decision to suspend her. It's also come out that she's complained twice to the FIA already and is set to file another grievance with the ethics committee. Again, full credit to the BBC this time that found this information. Even other news sources are crediting the BBC, so I think I'm not a news source, but I should give them the credit they deserve here. But man, the lack of transparency in this case is still very alarming. We still have no reason for why the investigation was dismissed, or why the woman was suspended, apart from that she was dishonest, which I mean, if she lied about the whole thing, then 100% I don't think Red Bull would want to employ her. But as I said last weekend, I don't think that's the case. I find it hard to believe that Red Bull knows for certain that she was lying. So we also don't know what she was dishonest about, right? Just because she said she was dishonest doesn't mean that she lied about, the behavior issues. She could have exaggerated one thing or lied about where she was one day or something. You know what I mean? They just said she was dishonest, so we don't know anything about what that could mean. It's all speculation at this point. But here is a statement from the FIA in regards to their compliance process. So this is kind of their response to it coming out that this woman probably did complain to them twice, but essentially they're saying they can't confirm it's her. Let me read it. At the FIA, inquiries and complaints are received and managed by the compliance officer and the ethics committee where appropriate. Both bodies, operate autonomously, guaranteeing strict confidentiality throughout the process. As a consequence, and in general, we are unable to confirm the receipt of any specific complaint, and it is unlikely that we will be able to provide further comment on the complaints that we may receive from any parties. So that's a whole lot of nothing. And again, saying basically they can't conclude that the complaints were even made by the same woman, even though it appears that that is glaringly obvious. They just, because it's autonomous, they have to say that, well, we can't confirm this was her and they can't link it to her. So, I don't really have a whole lot of confidence that the FIA is going to do anything about this. Maybe this new grievance is slightly different and something develops. I'm sure something will come out of this. Once again, it's the story that just, I don't want to say it keeps on giving, because usually that's maybe a bit of a positive thing to say, because it's definitely not a positive story. But this story doesn't seem to be going away anytime soon. So yeah, that's going to do it for episode 90 of Brake Bias. It's a short one this week. I'm your host, Brad Kramer, and I will be back next Monday to review the Australian Grand Prix. Today, I also start my new job, so wish me luck. Goodbye.